Yeah, you know what you can get me, Pee-wee?
What?
El Hombre.
First of all, as a service to the listeners, this is an absolute forget about it.
El Hombre.
He's a pariah. I mean, it's like going after raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens.
El Hombre.
It is time, everybody. Every Tuesday at 5 o'clock, we bring in the one, the only El Hombre, Michael Bradley, for a conversation. He joins us on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline. Hello, Michael.
What's happening?
Oh, man, let me tell you. I don't know. Did you watch? Do you have any idea what happened with the Mariners game last night?
Yeah, they won it on a walk-off salon, Grand Slam, right?
It wasn't a walk-off, but they were down 6-0 after the first inning.
Wow.
I mean, they were getting lit up. It was 7-0, and you're looking at that game against the Astros, who were as good as anybody, and you're looking at it going, okay, well, not their night. We'll try to get them tomorrow, and somehow, some way, they scratch and claw their way back and win the game, and it was just the building was exploding. It was electric. It was unlike any regular season game anybody could remember, so we were all celebrating it today, talking about it, excited, and now they've just made a trade where they sent away their closer, their best relief pitcher who's got an ERA under 1. They send him to the Astros.
What?
For a 211 hitting third base, part-time third baseman, who Abraham Toro. I don't know if this is one move.
I have
a
lawnmower.
What's that?
I have a lawnmower.
Well, the lawnmower is the 37-year-old veteran bullpen arm Joe Smith, who's got an ERA of just under 7.5, who comes over.
Good.
In addition,
that's malpractice.
Yeah, people are just a touch upset right now, Michael. But DePoto basically telling people, hey, you'll see what we're doing here. This is one of many moves that are going to be made, anticipated to be made. So we'll see. Maybe this player gets flipped over to another team for something else. Who knows? But on the surface, the best arm in a bullpen that has saved this team's bacon all year goes to your hated rival that's in town right now. This is not going over well.
No, I don't understand that stuff. You know, the Phillies are screaming for bullpen arms that are competent. And so to hear that somebody with a really good one is just giving them away, and they're in the wild card race and in the pennant race. I mean, you're 6 back. So, yeah, that is unfathomable, and I don't get it. And, you know, they better be doing something really good. I mean, like Goose Gossage's ghost or something, or where the fans have every right to be angry.
Well, it's funny, Michael, because we've been as excited – today, we were as excited as we've been in, since we've been doing the show together, that's for sure. I mean, it was just, and especially against the Astros, and then they just went head-to-head and took 3 out of 4 from the A's, and it was just so deflating, and, you know, and it's, I think, you should see the text. I mean, the fans are not happy because they just had this beautiful moment last night. Bob got choked up.
I got emotional.
I heard that.
Yeah, I mean, so, and now all of a sudden, but, you know, look, I guess you have to go, okay, we've trusted these guys so far, but, you know, there's a plan there. I guess it's just tough as a fan, right?
No, without a doubt. I mean, you have no control. You trust that your front office people, your managers, your management are going to operate in the best interest of the franchise and the fans. And what you have to do is sit back and wait till Friday, right? Is Friday the deadline?
Right.
Wait and see what happens. If it doesn't go well, then you excoriate the guy. If it does go well, then, okay, we'll see.
Yeah, the other part that's sort of disturbing with this one, Michael, is our, you know, one of our Mariners reporters for the Seattle Times reporting that his sources are telling him this did not go over well at all in the clubhouse. Fans are one thing. You're talking about the team being upset about something. This is a team that's really tightly knit, and they have, you know, really overcome a lot. They've had more players, I think, than any other team in baseball other than the Mets play this year with injuries, 54 different players. I mean, it's been ridiculous. And here they are, 9 games over 500, 1 back of the wild card, taking 3 of 4 from the team directly in front of you in the wild card, and then beating the Astros in an improbable fashion. And then this move. I can imagine that clubhouse could be a little tense, a little angry right now. That's you're kind of messing. You're taking a chance, I think, as a GM with something like that.
Yeah, it's like a nice cold beer with an ammonia chaser. You know, it's like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, All right. Well, we'll move on from that. We'll see what we learn.
We just wanted to complain to you.
Yeah, we want. Well, you could listen.
I understand.
The words I remember from Michael Bradley, him mocking, were something along the lines of trust the process out there in Philadelphia for years, right?
I never said trust the process.
No, you weren't saying it. You were hearing it from, was it the 76ers? And you kept scoffing at it.
And all their knucklehead fans who were like, let's go 10-72. Trust the process, morons.
So that was what was ringing in my ears with this. But we'll see. We'll have Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider, will join us at 5:30 and we'll talk about this. Hey, what is your take on this whole, you know, Texas and Oklahoma going, you know, to the SEC and everything? I mean, it's a little convoluted, but what I keep reading and what seems to be the bottom line, and I know you'll agree, is money. That they, if they're going to leave early, they're going to have to pay somewhere in the neighborhood of $75 to $80 million each to leave that conference early and get to the SEC, which tells me they've got maybe double that, maybe triple that waiting for them in the SEC, because they're not going to go there and be the big dogs. You're not going to go there and be the headliner out there.
Well, look, first of all, they're not going to pay $75 or $80 million, right? What they're going to do is they're going to say, hey, fellas, here's how we're going to do this. We're going to leave. You can sue us all you want. You can try to hold us to make us pay $75 or $80. But if we stay, we're going to be the worst partners you've ever imagined. We're going to make your lives miserable in every way we can. So let's reach an agreement where we'll pay you a certain amount, then we're going to go. Now, as far as the SEC goes, it just negotiated a new 10-year deal with ESPN. It's going to go back to the drawing board and back to ESPN. Now, for ESPN, this represents a great chance because it's fighting Fox for the college sports world, right? So the ESPN says, yeah, we'll take Oklahoma and Texas. We'll give you more money. And we're taking two teams away from a conference, the Big 12 that you have, basically destroying it. Because now the rest of the Big 12, none of those teams is attractive to any other conference, right? There's not a single one that you say, boy, we really need that Ames, Iowa, ADI. We want that Lubbock, Texas market, the Manhattan, as they say back here, Kansas marketplace. Lawrence, Kansas. Let's get Kansas' basketball team. But, oh, we forgot that ridiculous football team comes with it. That's a total joke. So the Big 12 is done, and Oklahoma and Texas saying, we can do this the nice way. Or we can hang out for two years with you, and we're going to be insufferable. We're not going to do anything to help the conference. We're going to make you miserable. And they'll say, we're leaving. So,
have you looked at any of the other conferences? Like, let's say that, because we were looking at Pac-12, Michael, and going, okay, who would be the, you know, if they're going to draw two away to some super conference. Let's say it's 5 years down the road, not the SEC, it's some super conference. Who are some of the, because Texas, I always hear that Texas, the program there, it isn't as big as they think it is, but there's just lots of money. But, you know, I'm trying to think of, I guess, I don't know what you would say, Bob, if you took two teams out of the Pac-12, who would it be? What, Oregon maybe? Maybe Oregon, USC?
Yeah, USC, certainly. And I've also heard rumors about, you know, people or USC exploring, people saying they should go independent. So
no, that's asinine. Because here's the thing. Notre Dame du Lac is independent for three reasons. One, it's got NBC as its broadcast partner.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it's got a home, the ACC, for all the rest of its teams through 2035. And three, with the 12-team college football playoff, it's got access to the playoff. So being independent makes sense for them. There's no reason for them to go into a conference for football unless the money becomes so outrageous. Unless the Big Ten says, oh, you're making $20 million with NBC and with the ACC? That's cute. We're paying our guys $75 this year. So going independent doesn't work. What I read in The Athletic today is somebody – here's the thing you got to remember about all this. The teams that are going and moving don't care about anybody else but themselves. And I'm not saying that Texas and Oklahoma are any different than any other school. If Iowa State could get into the Big Ten and make more money than it is now, which is a Big Ten's going to be paying out like $50 million, and Iowa State was getting 37 to 40, and you know it's not getting that without Oklahoma and Texas. So Iowa State will say, we're gone. Sorry. Goodbye, everybody. We don't care. So what somebody's hypothesized in the Athletic today is the Big Ten has to make a power move. The Big Ten's got to go get six teams from the Big 12.
What is college football going to look like 10 years from now?
It's going to look like the Premier League if you're a soccer fan. Not the Premier League. I'm sorry, the Champions League. It's going to be a bunch of schools, somewhere between 30 and 60 members, and they're going to be playing, and then there will be a 1 AAA with the Sun Belt and Conference USA and, you know, the MAC and, you know, the Big West and the Mountain, as we say back here.
Mountain.
They don't pronounce T's here. I'm trying to teach kids how to speak, like in public speaking, and I read up on the word. Board, how do you pronounce this word? Morton. And the kid's like, Morton. I'm like, no, it's Morton. And they say, that's what I said. No, you said Morton.
You know what? Because of you, every time I need a haircut, I always say, I got to go get hairs cut. Isn't that how it goes?
No. In Pittsburgh, they say, my hair needs cut.
Hair needs cut.
That's what they say in Pittsburgh. My hair needs cut.
And the rubber band is a gum band?
Gum band, and they say yins.
Yins.
Instead of you or yous, y'all yous. So they're called out. My son calls them the yinzers. You don't want to be a yinzer.
So good.
Where were we?
Oh, boy. Yeah.
No, anyway, there's going to be a giant conference. It's going to be all about money. And, you know, again, I always say to people, be careful what you wish for, right? So you put a 60-team mega conference in. What's your NCAA basketball tournament? And here's the thing about the NCAA basketball tournament. Nobody would care. So let's say the number 2 seed is Kansas and the number 15 seed is North Carolina State. Nobody cares if North Carolina State beats Kansas. They care if Norfolk State beats Kansas. They care if Lehigh beats Duke. They care if Ohio beats Ohio State or Miami of Ohio. That's what makes the tournament great. That's the madness. So the NCAA right now has been completely emasculated, okay? It is as impotent as can be. And now it's just down to the conferences and the presidents deciding who's going to carve up all this big money. The losers will be the fans who are going to find out, wait, we're not going to watch Oklahoma State anymore? Nope, they're not playing. We'll get Texas A&M back. That's great. And Alabama-Texas will be fun. But we've already lost a bunch of historic rivalries. And that's a big thing about college sports, hating that other team for your entire life.
It's weird to watch as it's happening and try to figure out, all right, what's behind it, what's going to – and it's always money. It's always money, so.
Yeah, you don't even have to ask. I mean, yeah. At this point now, if there's anybody out there naive enough to think that college athletics are about anything other than greed, then that person is naive, and please call me. I have some land to sell you on the good side of the Great Wall.
Hey, where are you at with, and I know we've touched on this here and there with the celebrations in baseball, but it was taken to a new level last night between the Cubs and the Reds, and we're seeing replays of it.
I loved it.
They're showing the history. I wasn't aware of the history between the two, and Javi Baez, you know, doing his little sweeping thing, and they're showing what happened on May 1st where, you know, one pitcher was celebrating, going out of his mind celebrating, and Javi Baez went nuts, and then last night Javi Baez comes up with the game-winning hit, and Dave thought he was mimicking a canoe ride.
I thought he was rowing a canoe, man.
I have no idea what he was doing. But
he was doing the broom. He was sweeping.
Yeah, that's legitimate. That's legitimate animosity.
You like that?
And I love it.
I like that Baez was talking to him.
Showboating.
Baez was talking smack to him before he came up with the hit.
He was in the batter's box going, come on, let's go.
Yeah.
And then when he's hitting, he's yelling, one pitch. I only needed one pitch. It was great. That's the kind of stuff that you need. Now, I don't need a bench clearing brawl. I don't need the next time that pitcher goes against the Cubs, he throws at somebody's head. I don't need that. But it's okay to have the Cubs and the Reds hate each other. You know what I mean? It's okay. Mm-hmm. We like that. you know, that's important, and that's what I'm saying about college football. Pitt and West Virginia have been great rivals forever. Then they just stopped playing because Pitt went to the ACC. So it's not a good thing to be taking away rivalries, but it is a good thing to be establishing new ones. And it looks like this Cubs Red thing looks pretty good.
Yeah, I agree, man. We've been talking all week about the Oakland A's, and that's one that I hate, the Oakland A's. It just seems like they always find a way.
How do you hate the Oakland A's?
Because they always find a way to just nickel and dime you to death. They've got a guy with a punchable face. Mark Canna. They've got a guy who calls himself Swervin' Irvin that talks noise and how the Mariners shouldn't hit him. And then, you know, remember when they were serving their AAA guys these cheese sandwiches that just looked like death? And I don't know. You go down to that stadium down there and it's just awful. I went down there a couple years ago. The last game I played in my career was in the Oakland Coliseum, and it was 1995. Everything's the same, Michael. They have not changed
anything. I was there in 1987, and it was a dump.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine what it's like now.
Well, they're consistent.
So anyway, that's my reasons. That's my reasons.
No. But now, when you said the guy's got a punchable face, the Germans are tremendous. they have a word called Backpfeifergesicht.
Mm-hmm. How do you spell that?
It's Backpfeifergesicht. You're not speaking German right unless you're spitting. Backpfeifergesicht. It's a name, the face that is in need of a punch.
Okay.
Did you really just spell that correctly?
Yes. The other thing is,
we're going to have to take his word for it. Sorry.
The Germans are great on compound words like Sitzpitzler. That's a guy who sits down to go to the bathroom. they've got all sorts of great stuff, but I like the face that is in need of a punch.
Yeah, that would be Mark Canna. And then they've got a pitcher that talked to you, as Dave said. He got lit up by the Mariners earlier and said, you know, I shouldn't be giving up 10 hits to a team like that. Nobody should. And just really letting him.
All right, well, that's legitimate. Okay.
Yeah, and then he came back out this time, and they knocked him out after four innings. So it was delightful. You know, that makes it fun because we lament the fact that the Seahawks 49ers rivalry is just, for the time being, it's gone. It's for the time being. When Harbaugh was there and when Kaepernick was there, kissing the bicep, and Harbaugh was always taking little digs, and it was so easy to hate them, but it was fun.
Sure.
It made it great. I mean, you know, Michigan, Ohio State, that's great. That's fun. But, you know, that we're missing that now. And the Mariners have never had a legit rival. But now it's starting to bubble. It's starting to happen with the A's and the Astros.
Yeah, and when you start getting good, that's when the rivalries start because teams start to dislike you. When you're losing, it's like, welcome, please, come on in. We'd love to see you here.
Yeah.
Please give us two out of three.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we want to see you. We can't get mad at you. It's like, you know, how do you get mad at the Arizona Diamondbacks? I mean, how do you get mad at the Texas Rangers? You know, it's impossible. But good teams, everybody hates the Yankees. Everybody now hates the Reds. You used to love the Red Sox, and they started winning, and their fans became insufferable.
Yes, they have.
So it's like, okay, now we hate them. They come to town, let's boo them. Umpires, we boo them. They're our adversaries.
Seems like anybody that comes through Philly is their hated adversary.
Not really. No. Most of the time, the hated adversary is the Phillies. Like tonight, they're losing. Last night, they went on a walk-off three-run home run. And people are saying, this is the game that's going to turn the season around. Right? They've been 500 18 or 19 times this year, something ridiculous like that. And people are going, this is now. It's now. Now they're going to turn it around. And they give up 2 3-run homers in the first couple innings. It's like, no, they're a dumb, bad team.
Dumb and bad. That's a bad combo.
Dumb baseball. They really do. I mean, last night they had 3 errors in one inning. That's almost impossible.
Hey, quickly before we let you go, do you have any sense at all as to how this Deshaun Watson thing is going to work out? This is you talk about convoluted stories, and he's reported to camp to avoid fines, still wants to be traded. I'm seeing stories where they're saying that they still expect to get 3 number ones for him. How could any team out there possibly give anything close to that when you've got no idea if this guy's going to be a free man? Is he going to be in jail? Is he going to be suspended by the league? It's a weird story.
No, I agree with you. And, I mean, look, right now the NFL is doing what it has to do. People get very upset. Why is he in camp? Why he's in camp? Because the NFL can't suspend him yet because no investigation has been concluded. So we can't be sure. You know, everything's alleged. Everything, we don't take anything, you know, for granted. We always, you know, innocent until proven guilty, et cetera, et cetera. What's going to happen is at some point before the season, they're going to put him on the, you know, the reserved list or whatever the heck it is. Then when they complete this thing, they're going to tell him he's suspended, and then he's got to worry about, is he going to be in jail? What's he going to get? Probation. How much money is he going to have to pay in settlements? He's got 22 women. 22. This isn't two. This isn't one. This isn't a he said, she said. This is a he said, they said. And they're really loud because they've been abused by this guy, allegedly. So I agree with you. And they're talking. The Eagles are a potential landing spot for Deshaun Watson. If they do that, they should. The franchise should have visited upon it 50 years of horrible luck, locusts, and other things.
He is Michael Bradley. You can find him on Twitter, at Daily Ombre. At Daily Ombre is where you find Michael, and you find him here every Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Without Mariners games going on, certainly in the day. But he's been very, very gracious in adjusting that time as well. Michael, we'll do it again next week.
So long, suckers.
There you go. In all of his glory once again. At Daily Ombre on Twitter. All right, coming up, our Mariners insider Shannon Dreher will join us next to make sense of it all with Wyman Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
The Mariners have made a move. We wondered what they'd be doing as the trade deadline rapidly approaches, and they made a move with a team that happens to be in town on the other side of the field there, the Houston Astros. They send their best arm out of the bullpen, Kendall Graveman, along with Rafael Montero, over to the Astros in exchange for Abraham Toro, a 24-year-old infielder, and the carcass of Joe Smith, who's 37 years old with an ERA of about 7.5. And here to talk me off the ledge and all of us off the ledge, our Mariners insider, Shannon Dreher. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, guys.
So give me your reaction. As you might imagine, I'm sure you've gotten on Twitter, and you could imagine our text screen and Twitter. This is being very poorly received.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that. I think everybody, you know, initially the shock of what you were seeing, which was something that's perceived in as a lot in Kendall Graveman for not much in a guy that you probably look at in the Houston batting order as being one of those low 200 guys and a disappointed journeyman type reliever. But my first reaction was, well, this isn't it. There's going to be something else. And Jerry DePoto down in the field said so much. So that is not a surprise. And, you know, it's been funny to watch everything that's been going on the last few days as the rumors start to heat up. Let's just keep in mind that DePoto has basically done everything that he has said he is going to do or attempt to do. He's been very upfront for a long time now and what he would like to do, targeting players either out off season or at the deadline in trade. So let's not get too carried away when you see the huge names and things like that out there. Although I think, you know, that's always going to be an option with the farm system that the Mariners have. And I don't think it's completely out of the question that Jerry would make a big move like that. We just haven't seen it yet. But it's more than likely he is looking for pieces that are going to help get them to the end of the year and or fit into what they are doing right now. And that's what Toro is. He fits right into that young core that they are growing. And he's had some ups and downs in the big league club. He hasn't quite clicked as of yet, but this is a guy that was able to hit for high average and had good power in the minor leagues, some positional flexibility, switch hitter. He's exactly the kind of player that the Mariners tend to like under Jerry DePoto. And as far as control goes, not arbitration eligible until 23 and not a free agent until 26. So that makes sense that they would target a player like that. But then the question is, if this is the first move, is he a player that they're looking to flip or looking to keep? And he is a player that I can see them very, very much liking. So I'm not sure about that. But, you know, you kind of think there's another team want Toro. They weren't able to get him. We're going to have to just wait and see on that. But I think it's going to be an active 48 hours, even before we get to the deadline with the Jerry. And it's sounding like he could be starting to zero in on a pitcher right now.
Shannon, so it was really sad. I mean, it was the emotions right now, because we went from one of the most exciting evenings in Mariner recent history anyway to this, and it seems like, you know, it sounded like Graveman was getting choked up. And what will they do as far as, you know, talking to the players and bringing them together? Will Scott do that? Will Jerry come down and talk, you know, about it? Are they gonna talk the guys through this? Because it sounded like a few guys weren't too happy about it.
Well, from what I'm hearing, it's not just a few guys. This has an impact on the entire team, as Kendall Graveman was one of the leaders of this team and a very vocal leader at that. In fact, he spoke after the game a couple of nights ago about how important it was to keep as much of this team together as possible, that they'd all really gelled together, and he believed that that was responsible for a lot of the success that they were having. And, you know, little did we know that within 72 hours, the team would be apart some, and it would be him who was leaving right there. So I don't know if Jerry will talk to them. Scott, I'm sure, will talk to them. And I think that it's going to be along the lines of the same thing that he talked to them when they brought Cal Raleigh up. And you had two established catchers up there already. And the message there was, this is about winning. And we are doing everything we can to win right now. And as far as the catchers go, you know, that means you guys help this guy out. You know, everybody's going to play. We'll get everybody in there. But you want him here because he is going to help you win, you know, now and in the long run. So my guess would be that, you know, the message would be, this isn't about an individual. And DePoto acknowledged with the media down on the field earlier that he imagined that there would be folks who weren't too happy about this in the clubhouse. But, you know, you hear it all the time. You hear the talk that this is a business, and you don't want to take too much from the emotion of it. I think a lot of the things that we've seen with this club over the last 2 months, there's been a lot of emotion, a good emotion that's been involved in it. So you run that risk when you take that player out of the mix. But I would imagine that, you know, they will just kind of buckle down and anticipate that it's going to be rough for a couple of days, and then they're going to have to tell this team, you've got, you know, bigger goals here. That's what you need to focus on right now. And hopefully that'll be a little bit easier with moves that could be coming.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to have to be his saving grace, because as this stands on its own, Shannon, everybody that looks at it says, what are you doing? How do you – the bullpen is in large part – responsible for where they're at, which is 9 games over .500 and a game behind in the wild card race, if not for this bullpen, which has been, with a few exceptions here and there, lights out. And you trade the best arm there, people are going to be mad. And you trade it for what, to me, Shannon, seems like a redundant player. You've got a version of Toro. You have two versions of Toro on this roster already, in Dylan Moore and Shed Long, two guys who have positional flexibility, who are young guys. Yeah. I think you've got versions of him already, so I'm wondering if he is in fact going to be somebody that's flipped in another trade that maybe is brewing, and maybe we'll hear about it tonight or what have you. But I don't see on the surface how his addition makes a ton of sense.
Okay, a couple of things here. I know that Kendall Graveman, you look at him and you saw him at the end of the games most often. Over the last month, you've actually, I think, been seeing Paul Sewald in the higher leverage situations, and I think that he has emerged. If you want to talk about the best pitcher in the Mariners' bullpen, I think since he has come on the scene, and especially in the last month and a half, I think that might actually be Paul Sewald. So you're losing a very good arm in Kendall Graveman, no question about it. You are losing a leader in that group as well. We know that. And then the other thing that I would say about Shed Long, and I would just say about Dylan Moore, I think the ceiling on Abraham Toro is higher than it is on those two players. I wouldn't say that he is exactly, that you've got exactly that out on the field right now. And I think that he is probably, I know that he's been up for parts of three seasons right now, but I think that experience-wise, I think he is a little bit behind, in that he was coming up into a Houston Astros club that was built to contend, and you come up and you perform now. He hasn't had kind of that longer runway where, okay, this is about you this year in playing. So I don't know. It could be that he is somebody that has turned around and flipped right away. That's very possible right now. But if he stays with the Mariners, you can look at that player and say that is kind of somebody that is a DePoto type player. And he does fit in that window, that mix. And, you know, look, he was a highly ranked prospect within the Houston Astros organization. So or is a highly ranked prospect within the Houston organization. So if he does stick around, I think that, you know, maybe kind of look at him with a little bit different eyes there.
Shannon, we appreciate you jumping on at the last minute, and we'll see what else gets done with Jerry and the crew. Thanks so much.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a busy couple of days.
All right. There you go. There's Shannon Dreher, our Mariners insider. We'll come back and we'll discuss this a little bit more, a few things that she had to say, and get into this conversation.
Can
about
we bring back the joy of last night, or is it gone, Bob?
I think it's gone. I think it's gone. We'll do our best. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Got the Mariners pregame show coming up at the top of the hour.
You know, can I just get this off my chest?
Yeah.
We talked about yesterday being last night being one of those games that you just entirely wrote off, and then it ended, you were just elated.
Yeah, it was as improbable as it gets.
This show has gone exactly the opposite.
Yeah,
we were just entirely elated. I'm sitting here looking at we were going to replay some of these calls. There's no point in that.
Will it make people feel better? Here, see if this makes anybody feel better.
Bases loaded, two outs.
Does that make anybody feel better?
Usually Aaron Goldsmith's voice cracking is kind of like me just looking at a picture of Adam Ray.
Just laughing?
I'll just laugh.
Yeah.
But that didn't quite get me there. Man. Well,
yeah.
I just get the feeling that he was much beloved in that clubhouse. Now, I hope Shannon's right because, you know, look, I mean, she was taking the positive side there and saying that she thinks that maybe they think the ceiling is higher for Abraham Toro than it was for Demo or Shed.
Maybe it is. I don't know.
Could be. Well, look, and if they think that, I guess we have to say, okay, we trust them. I don't know how much more baseball knowledge I have than Jerry DePoto. I don't think it's a lot, Bob. But
it might be a little. Is that what you're saying?
No. But, I mean, also, if this is part of an ongoing trade that, you know, is going to be, because that was kind of what Shannon was saying in the beginning, that it's going to unfold in a different way, and this is just part of it, and it's going to make sense later. You know, and I don't know if it's going to make sense to anyone. To me, it's not so much about the trade and what they're getting. It's more about Graveman and the good feeling that they had in that clubhouse and just how big of a part he seems to be. And mm-hmm. I always say, you should just listen to the players. The players will tell you who are the guys that mean something. Who are the guys? And I make a habit of asking guys, hey, who are some of the guys you lean on in there? Who are the guys that you get some, especially with all the young guys this year, like Cal Raleigh? And Graveman's name's come up quite a bit.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know that it's so much an attachment to Kendall Graveman himself. He's been phenomenal this year, and I'll disagree with Shannon. He's been the best arm in that bullpen, and I'm going to disagree with Aaron Toro as well. I don't know why you say his ceiling is higher. Based on what? Because he hit well at the AAA level? So did Vogie. So did Trammell. Hit 600. Doesn't mean anything at this level we're learning each and every day. You know, Luis Torrens was hitting, what, 211, 213 down there, and then comes up here and hits. So the connection between the two is becoming more and more distant to me. I think you have versions of this kid on your roster in Dylan Moore and Shed Long, in my opinion, just looking at his numbers over 3 years. Maybe Jerry sees something in him that we don't, and okay, I'd love to be proven wrong. Love it. I would love for him to turn into a stud. Or maybe he is going to end up on another team and he's just part one of a deal that's going to culminate in them getting the starting pitcher from this team or this second baseman from this team, what have you. I don't know. We're going to find out. But at first blush reaction in a standalone trade, you look at this and go, well, they got fleeced. I don't know how you feel like they won. You know, this kid has proven nothing at this point. He hasn't given anybody a reason to think, well, you wait to see what this kid's made of. Okay, based on what?
Well, lots and lots and lots of things that we don't see. and that we haven't seen. That's what. I mean, look, that's to me, I mean, Jerry DePoto didn't just stumble into this job. And same thing with service. You see the things that those guys see. So, I mean, I'm always going to err on the side of, look, they know what they're talking about. This one stings right now, and I know everybody's kind of angry, especially with the emotional turnaround, because I'm bummed about it, too. It was such a, like I said, the show was all about our Mariner love and how exciting it was, and now you see him get rid of a piece, and it doesn't make sense on the surface, but maybe it will later. But I, you know, I just
tonight, yeah, maybe another move is made tonight, tomorrow.
Yeah, or maybe Toro comes in, and you know, they get him turned around and get him to, you know, we're looking back on this.
Speaking of turned around, Dave.
Yeah,
what could really make this bad is if they fix Montero. If all of a sudden,
now that's just.
If all of a sudden Montero just starts mowing guys down in an Astros uniform, all of a sudden he's unhittable. That is really going to be the kicker of this whole thing.
I would have to agree with you on that. So, and you know, and we may see Graveman tonight.
You
saw a picture.
16 pitches of it last night. So, yeah, he's wearing an Astros uniform.
Evil
doing
orange hat on.
Ugh, that's got to feel dirty. He's got to be feeling like, ugh. Can't believe I'm wearing this, but... You know, he's a guy that, and we talked about this again. The idea that you were going to lose somebody we've all become accustomed to seeing and attached to is very realistic. You're not getting something for nothing. You're going to have to give somebody up. So it's not so much parting with Kendall Graveman. It's just what they seem to have gotten back in return, and they weakened what has really kept you afloat, which is this bullpen. And you took out, in my opinion, the best arm in that bullpen. She thinks it's Seawall. That's fine. I think they're both great. But in my opinion, you just weakened your bullpen, which has been really, really crucial because your starters have not been going deep. Dunn and Sheffield are still hurt, and you've not gotten consistent performances out of guys. So, to me, you weakened a really crucial part for a piece right now that is redundant, in my opinion. You've got Shed Long and Dylan Moore, which, in my opinion, are versions of Toro. Now, maybe he ends up being a superstar, and I will absolutely wear it if that's the case. Or he gets flipped to another team, like I said. But just we're reacting to the now. And to the now, you got a redundant piece, and you got a 37-year-old reliever who's got an ERA of 7.5.
Well, and I think the key word there is that they seem to have. You know, and again, that alludes to the fact that there's lots of things that we don't know and that we haven't seen. So, it you know, hopefully it will all make sense. It will all come together. I just think it's particularly bad timing. Now, look, you're 4 or 5 days away from the 4 days away from the trade deadline. So it has to have happened at some point here. So, you know, and look, the timing is probably going to be this bad anyway. It's just too bad it comes on the heels of that fantastic win of a team that seemed to be really put together. Now, like you said, Rafael Montero, that would be really...
If they fix him.
That would be very cruel.
If they fix him.
Very cruel by the baseball gods. But, to me, it just seems like it's such a... We just got nothing but love for this team right now. Graveman's a huge part of it. Now he's gone.
I wonder
it
what
stinks.
Kind of, I wonder what we're going to see tonight. I could see a very deflated, flat team. I mean, that would make sense to me. I hope that's not the case. I want him to win the series, certainly, and... But I don't. What hearing or reading that report that hey, this did not go over well in the clubhouse, and they know better than anybody. All right, this is part one of many moves to be made. It's a chess game, but this initial move, as it stands on its own until something else is done, is really hard to take. So we'll see what goes on. You've got the Mariners and Astros game two coming your way. Pregame show coming up. Want to thank our guests today: Mike Blowers, John Clayton, El Hombre, Michael Bradley, and Shannon Dreher for joining us on the show. If you missed anything, head to the podcast page, 710 Sports. Click on our picture. Click on the podcast tab. It's all right there waiting for you. We'll be back tomorrow from Seahawks camp with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.